Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Savirjan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 20, Lord Chaitanya instructs Sanatana Goswami in the science of the Absolute Truth. Page 135, Srila Prabhupada. The Purusha avatars are the lords of universal creation. These are Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, and Kira Dakshaya Vishnu. There are also Lila avatars, and these include Chatusana, or the four Kumaras, 2, Narada, 3, Varaha, 4, Matsya, 5, Yajna, 6, Nara Narayana, 7, Kardama Muni, 8, Dattatreya, 9, Hayashirsha, 10, Hamsa, 11, Dhruva Priya, or Prishni Garbha, 12, Rishabha, 13, Prithu, 14, Nrisimha, 15, Kurma, 16, Danvantari, 17, Mohini, 18, Vamana, 19, Bhargava, Parasaram, 20, Raghavendra, 21, Vyas, 22, Pralambari Balaram, 23 Krishna, 24 Buddha, and 25 Kalki. These 25 personalities of Godhead are known as Lila avatars because they appear in each day of Brahma, or in each Kalpa millennium. They are sometimes known as Kalpa avatars. Of these incarnations, because the day of Brahma is also known as a Kalpa, right? Yeah. Of these incarnations, Hamsa and Mohini are neither permanent nor very well known. They were mentioned in here? Among these? Mohini, yes, 17. And?
Hamsa, 10.
Hamsa is 10, okay. Of these incarnations, Hamsa and Mohini are neither permanent nor very well known, but they are listed among the Prabhava avatars. Kapila, Dattatreya, Rishabha, Danvantara, and Vyas are eternally situated and very widely known. They are also counted among the Prabhava incarnations. Kurma, Matsya, Narayana, Varaha, Hayagriva, Prishnagarbha, and Baladev, the killer of Pralambasura, are counted among the Vaibhava avatars. So here you have Prabhava, Vaibhava, but they're all counted in Lila avatars. Mm-hmm. So it means one is manifesting the qualities, one is having a particular personalities. Right? It doesn't mean that the qualities is not a personality, but the qualities are the stronger point. And the others, then the personality is the stronger point. You know, you say like Kurma, Matsya, then they're doing some particular activities and all that. But then you see Kapila, Dattatreya, Rishabha, Dhanvatar, Vyas is known for writing and all these things. So there are also Lila avatars here. And then you see, so then the one's going to be Prabhava, the other one's going to be Vibhava. And then you're also going to have Vyas, then depending upon when it is, when Swayam Krishna comes, then he'll be Vishnu Tattva. The other ones, he'll be Jiva Tattva. So he'll also be counted in the Aveshas. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's why you have all these different things, but just to get this clean chart where everyone's got their spot and nothing overlaps and everything is not going to happen. You know. So we have to appreciate this, the Prabhava aspect, the Vibhava aspect, and then who's that either one of them, they're both performing Leela. Right? Because there's some pastime that goes on and all that, and then everybody else is involved and something like that.
Right.
Yes?
When Krishna says in the Gita, he comes, Paritamaya Sadhanam, to take the devotees, Vinasha, which will destroy the demon, and reestablish principles of religion. Does that apply to specific avatar or to
these all will be doing that, but to what degree and all that. But the point is that he's going to come at some point and do that. And different ones have their different activities. So they're all going to be doing something. Because Krishna is coming as everything. So within that, you have to have an environment within which to perform those activities. So the Leela avatars will perform those activities. But like Guna avatars, it's not that they don't do different activities, but at the same time is that they're specifically taking care of, you know, the modes of nature, you know, the qualities there, because the whole universe has to run under the modes, so then they become, you know, very prominent there. You know, the Purusha avatars and the Guna avatars, because Purusha will take all the positions like that of within the universe, you know, I mean within the Mahatattva, but then the Guna avatars within the universe are going to take their position there. But not that those positions aren't there outside of the universe. Also, the primordial demigods and this and that. So the basic thing is you understand the principles that are there, what's going on. And then, depending upon which description is there, then that description, you're bringing out a certain aspect. And then in a different description, might be bringing out a different aspect.
Well, different degrees.
Different degrees, but also it's just the different aspects of what's coming around. You know, just like your chair. We can talk about how it keeps you off the ground, you know, and this and that. It's comfortable, this and that. We can also talk about how it's made out of plastic. You know, so the plastic discussion will be completely different. One won't even understand it's a chair. But we're still talking about the chair. So that's what comes up is we're used to these kind of like, you know, modern corporate kind of presentations or academic presentations where it's just some clean, like, thing. It's just perfectly logical. And in other words, the value is the logic, not the value is the understanding. In other words, something doesn't make logical sense to me, I don't pursue it to understand it in that form. I try to adjust it until it fits into my... You know, and sometimes, you know, it only takes a shoehorn, sometimes a hammer, and, you know, sometimes a stick of dynamite to try to get it into my logical form. So it's not actually real pursuance of knowledge. So that becomes a difficulty when we've grown up in that. Because, you know, like the chart you showed, I can guarantee you that whoever wrote that went to IIT.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so they're going to think they're very, very intelligent. And because they're intelligent, if they can understand it, then it makes sense. And if they can't, it's wrong. So they won't take that extra step to figure out there, like the Paravasta. Paravasta means they're exactly non-different than Krishna. They have all 64 qualities, but only Krishna manifests them. So that means... Krishna manifests all of them, and he's the origin of that, but he has four other forms that are exactly him with 64 qualities that they don't show the last four qualities. There's a lecture in Bombay on Ram Navami, I think in 74, where then Prabhupada talks about Ram can play the flute, do that, but he doesn't because Krishna's doing that already. He takes on that flavor of Maryada. Lord Chaitanya takes on that mood of servant, of Radharani. You know, as a servant, you know, in the form of Shakti. Balaram takes it on as servant in the form of Vishnu Tattva. Nrisimha, then he protects. You know, it mentions that in Goloka, Nrisimha is there, but you don't really see him. You can perceive him, and that you can feel his presence, but you don't see him manifest as such, because he doesn't perform pastimes there. So, these five, and so they've put them way down in Tadatmika, right down on the bottom. So, because that makes sense to them, because they also perform Leela, so they'll go in with the Leela avatars. But no, that is, you're going to have the avatars that are going to be Swamsas within the Tadatmika. And so you're going to have them on 999, you know, whatever it is, whenever they come. But when Krishna comes himself as Swayam Krishna, then they're all appearing as Swayam. That's not reviewed in the chart, because that then doesn't make sense, because how can one person be in two places at once? You know, just like we pointed out with Vyasadeva. He's a Leela avatar, but he's also an Avesha. And so that kind of stuff does not jive with an academic. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be a problem. Though they did work out a very nice on the chart showing how the Aveshas come there in also the six kinds of Swamsas. But they have to have a separate chart to show, you know, the three main categories. So, you know, it makes it easier because it's just like in the structure of the universe. They show it top down and they show it from the side. They don't show it combined. Because people can understand Dwait and Adwait, but Achinta, Beta, Beta, no, they're not going to bother. So that's the thing, is how can it be this and that? That's how our philosophy works. You know what I'm saying? So that's always going to be a problem when you're dealing with these things. So as long as they understand, they can get one discussion in a list and another discussion in a list, and they can try to make some connections and this and that. But your principal points are what's made. Like they always talk about the Prakasha and Vilas and the Prakasha and the Vilas and the Vaibhav and the Prabhav. The definitions of that, that's the actual important thing. Because that's there is reason why will they be there? One is expressing more of a quality that's there, and then, you know, things that go along with that quality, and someone else's it's more of a different mood. But it's not that they may not have that same quality. But because the mood is different, that's what takes prominence. So rasa is the main thing on that. So therefore, tattva is just a delineation of rasa. You know, rasa is there just like the musical quality that it gives out a certain emotional content. That's the important thing. But you can also then, you know, that's the experience of it. And you can say, this rag does this rasa and this and that. And okay, it's nice. But then we want to know technically how it does that. But then you have to get down and, okay, you have these notes and these kind of notes do this. And when they're in this order, then they give this flavor in that order. Then it gets very technical. But then we can get lost and forget it's about the rasa. So as long as you remember that aspect, then the things work nice. So Krishna is a person. You know, just like we having this big problem on, you know, how you say, you know, the particular point where it says, don't read too many books. Yes. Yeah, so then the point is the acharyas are given certain things and all that, and, you know, Prabhupada said we're cool with that. But then we go off and we read books on our own. We don't understand them because we don't bring them back and connect them with what Prabhupada's saying. Because that's the whole point. You can only understand the previous acharyas through your acharya. That's what Rupa Goswami says. I think it's point 5 in the 6th chapter of Nectar Dosha. Like that. So you can't do it. So then they're going to try to take, oh, but this one says this. Right there, they're gone. As soon as they say, oh, no, Prabhupada says this, but Jiva says that, and Vishnu says this, what is it? They're gone. As soon as they say, okay, Rupa says this, and Jiva says this, and Prabhupada says this. So, what Prabhupada says, how by understanding what Prabhupada says, does that, are we able to appreciate then, therefore, the detail, specific detail, or specific aspect that Rupa and Jiva have brought out? Then you'll get somewhere, then you can understand. But if you take it that, oh, this one said this with that, you're gone. Gone means you're not on the spiritual platform. You're not in the ballpark of understanding spiritual knowledge. We can say that very, very clearly. Because if you try to understand the previous acharyas, then you're jumping over the head without the acharya. And that's compared to a monkey. And monkeys aren't known for being very smart. They're clever as anything. Steal your glasses, train them for a banana, chew on them a little bit just to get a little satisfaction. You know? But that's as much value as that approach is. Literally, it has no more value than monkeys and Loy Bazaar stealing your glasses. Academics may hate to hear this, but I'm sorry, we're not here to coddle their false ego. In other words, when Prabhupada came, he had people much bigger and smarter than now coming and surrendering. All the acharyas had big, big intellectuals coming and surrendering. Sanatana Goswami, they can't in any way compare to Sanatana Goswami. Who can sit with 30 scholars and discuss Bhagavatam? And why 30? Because they'll be bringing out different angles and all that, and Sanatana Goswami can relate to all that. And he says, I'm a fool. I don't know who I am. And so if we're not following the footsteps of these six Goswamis, who cares for their intellectual prowess? Literally. And I wouldn't say anything, but they bring it up as if their position is very important and confuse the minds of the general devotees. So they're not doing any service or value for the movement. It's not that, oh, he's come from a nice background, he's smart, you know, so he can do some nice service and all that. That's fine. That's great. That's good. Fabulous. But as soon as you identify with it and therefore put yourself in a superior position to other Vaishnavas because of your mundane position and identity, right there, you're not on the spiritual platform. You have zero to add in that context and in that mentality to a spiritual movement. I mean, zero, we're being generous. Actually, you're doing a disservice. So saying zero, we're being nice. They should take that. Otherwise, we can go heavier on how they're destroying the movement. The Hindu culture becomes destroyed because of so-called intelligent Brahmins applying their logic. You look in history, every time it took a big dive was because a Brahmin came up with some foolish view. Every time. Like that. The Muslims come along, sprinkle their holy water, say, now you're all Muslims. So then they go to the smart Brahmins, what are we supposed to do? Instead of saying, go take a bath with all your clothes on, which is what the Shastra says, and then, you know, just go on with your life. What do we care about what these guys say? They say, no, you have to drink boiling ghee, and then in your next life you could be Hindu. So therefore now 300 million Muslims. Because of those smart Brahmins. Yeah, smarta, not smart, but smarta.
In Hebrew, there is a word called smartut.
Smartut.
Which is a broom.
A broom. Well, they need one. Sweep out their brain, you know. Get a broom. Yeah, give them a broom.
But it's interesting that Prabhupada's property in Sisi are all Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur.
Yeah.
So he is quoting...
He's quoting that anytime, if you actually compare them, understanding the descending process of knowledge, you'll see that none of them say anything different than each other. They're all saying the exact same thing. Just they're taking, bringing out different angles. In other words, if Rupa's already described one angle very clearly, then another angle that could come up from that, you know, then they'll describe. Like in the first canto, it means the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada gives a big purport, and each paragraph is bringing out a different aspect of vichar, a different angle to look at it. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that, you know, so much. So the whole idea is that they're never going to contradict. Prabhupada says very clearly, acharyas don't contradict, shastras don't contradict. If you see a contradiction, it's you, not the shastra. So therefore, then when someone says, so then they're saying this, but it's one person. Krishna is one person. He's non-dual. So therefore, if he's sitting in Vrindavan or he's sitting in Dwarka, it's the same person. It's just different devotees. So he reciprocates as they surrender. It's right in Gita. Right? So therefore, if you don't have love for Krishna, you don't manifest love for Krishna, you don't show any love for Krishna, he'll reciprocate on that platform that you want material things and he'll arrange it for you. Why? Because he loves you. He loves us. We're the ones that have to catch up. Krishna always loves us. Just like the parent loves the child, you know, even though the child may not know who they are or that and eventually develops a relationship. But they love, you know, before they appear. So that's Krishna. And then they'll say, you know, Krishna, you know, this, why I came from this one, that. They're the same person. that you deal formally, you're in the material world, you're a nonsense, and then you're complaining? You know? That's like saying, I got thrown into jail, but just by, you know, a regular policeman. You know, I'm such a special person. Why wasn't I thrown in jail by the mayor himself or the president of this country? Why didn't he come and throw me in jail? I'm so special. That's the problem. So that's why it says again and again and again, every prayers, set of prayers, no matter who they are, Brahma, Shiva, right down, even your you know, personification of karma, kanda, daksha, you know, your ultimate smarta. He even says, by intellectual understanding, you can never understand this. You're beyond this. Right? You know, all the others, Shankaracharya says, all the others, anybody who has a brain, they all admit you can't understand. And then we're saying, oh no, because it's this, we need this more in our movement. And all it does is confuse. That means if you want to be a servant of Maya's, you know, what is it, bewildering the Guna Maya, and what's the other one?
Jiva Maya.
If you want to be a servant of Jiva Maya and do and help her out, hey, go for it. You're doing a great job. This is what I'm talking about, less than zero. And we can go farther, but we'll stop here. So the whole point is, you know, you just make it easy for Maya. So that's the thing, is the acharyas are there, they say this, and we try to understand. Because the point is whether you fully understand this or not, if you have faith in Krishna, have faith in the holy name, faith in the Vaishnavas, you'll go back to Godhead. Because it said, I was just reading today, that Siddha Swarup, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that the actual main meaning is understanding the holy Dham, revealing the transcendental realm. But because we're always so self-centered, Swarup City's got to be me and my Swarup. It's like, I know I'm a this or I'm a that, but what about the relationships? What about the others? What about all this? That's not the important point. Well, I want to know who I am, and I got to be a big guy. You know? Guy in the modern sense, because now we call girls also guys or dudes or, you know, like this, you know, so whatever it is. You know. So, but the point is no, until you understand the realm, how can you understand how you fit into it? Just like if I take, okay, let's say I take a chess piece and I take, let's say, a bishop and I explain everything about a bishop. Now, do you know how to play chess? No idea. But when you understand the board, you understand all that, what's going on and all that, then when you know what the bishop is, oh, he does this. Yes. So that's the whole thing. We always like to get it backwards. The descending process is you understand the Dham, then you can understand who you are. And if you try to understand who you are without understanding the Dham, then we're going to end up in some, you know, mental speculation. That's also a possibility. I mean, the material world is a mental asylum.
I was thinking you're going to say Hotel California.
That too. That's the point. You're never going to get out with that mentality. That's the whole point. See? They were talking about, you know, all this Jiva Maya and everything. Right? The nice girl, right? You know? Yeah, they had it. I was just pulling it back so I'd be a little more nice. I'm trying to be nice these days. So, the point is they have to have faith in those principal points that are given, and you add detail as much as you can understand. You know, that's the way everything works. That's the Vedic approach, is you know the principal points, then as you have the ability, you expand. But if your expansion, you lose the principal points, that's beyond what you can do. In the modern, they do it in a linear way, rather than coming out of the center. They do it in a rising way. It's called the Peter Principle. Heard of this?
No.
Peter Principle, because there's a saying, at least in American English, something goes until it peters out. It just ends. You know, there's nothing left of it. That means it petered out. You know, like, you know, the guys, that petered out. You know, just ended. So the guy is doing here, he's doing great, and then he moves up in the company here, he's doing great, then he moves up here, he's doing really great, and then he moves up to here and he's terrible. So that means this is the last point where he does fabulous. Above that, he'll be useless. So that's a principle, and the Vedic is just you have the core, and then you go out as much as you can. Like I've seen, I don't know if you see it as much nowadays, but I remember, you know, some years back, you'd see these like in South India and that, these, you know, Chennai guys and, you know, musicians and that, and they can sit there and just, you know, improvise for hours and hours and hours. But they have one guy there that has this little box. It's like a harmonium that plays one note. And it's got two things on each side. It's like a dulcimer. And he just does that the whole time. So you could say, hey, anybody could do that. No, they can't. He can sit there for hours and hours every day, day in, day out, and all that. And he's kind of relating to the scene. So he's a musician. But that's as far as his ability is. But he's a musician. You may say, is that? No, you could sit there and go like this for how long? Could you sit there for 6 hours while those guys play? And you're sitting there and absorbed in it. So that's as much as he can do. Then you have the two Chennai guys. One guy's doing all this thing, and the other guy is just also playing drone, and now again a few little core, you know, little runs and that and that. So that's the whole point, is that you have different levels, like we saw in the Natya Shastra. You have the guy that knows everything about the whole scene. Then you know somebody who almost knows that. He's expert in it, but not master at it. So he's the assistant. Then you know someone who knows one area of it very well, but he doesn't know the whole thing. He knows his. Then he has people that know part of that. They can assist in that. Someone can work with the clothes, someone with the makeup, someone with, you know, the ornaments. But they can't do all of them. But there is a person that can do all of those. But then there's the guy who can do that and everything else. So that's the thing, is you find your spot. But no one wants to find their spot because it's all about prestige. I don't want to be anything less. I want to be the best. I want to be the top. But Sanatana Goswami is, people say I'm a scholar, but I, my opinion, I'm a fool. Yes?
We discussed today and it came up that, okay, we are servants, but there's nothing about servants in the scriptures.
Nothing about servants.
Yeah, no descriptions, you know, it's not an emphasis given, so it's very depressing.
Very depressing, there's no emphasis on service.
Not service, servants themselves. You know, it's a lot of description of the main roles, all are taken already, and no description about the servants. So
assistance.
No inspiration.
What do you mean, no inspiration? Servants serve the people who are doing something.
Yeah, and there's no description. That's what I'm saying. That's what.
Because they're taking an ascending process. That's the whole point. The ascending process will ruin everything. It means you can use it in the beginning because that's all we know. We're in the material world, that's all we have. But as soon as we come in contact and we start to learn this descending, then you have to, at one point, switch. I mean, that's Prabhupada Krishna's point, is Sarva Dharma and Parityaja. Switch to, it's about Krishna, and then how you fit into that, rather than there's me, and then, you know, I can do this and that, and then, okay, I can connect it to Krishna, and sometimes if I don't connect it to Krishna, but I'm being me, you know, and all that. And so you start with that. But the point is that's being brought up, elevated as if it's something special, when it's a beginning stage. And everybody will start there, so therefore that you're connected to Krishna, then that's glorious. That's the whole point. And you just continue at it, you will go back to Godhead. You know, it's just, it's because Krishna's looking for the attitude. But here, we're getting into technical points, losing the attitude and thinking the technical points will take it. They won't. The scriptures are unlimited. You can never understand all the details. Yes.
Also, it shows that people actually don't know what they're talking about.
Yes.
Because they don't look in that section of Nectar of Devotion where the servants are described.
Yes.
And we fortunately read through, and it's quite detailed.
Yes.
You know, all kinds of servants and the relationship,
So it is there, but we have to know our own Siddhanta.
Yes. Yes, you have to know. But at the same time, it's just like, let's say, if you have an individual, he knows money. And let's say another individual, you know, someone's in the economic field. Someone else is, let's say, in the administrative field. Someone else is in, let's say, the architectural or field. Another one in an engineering field. Okay, now let's say all of them walk into, you always have in those old European cities, those huge, like, train stations or things like that. You know, they're always done very nicely.
Yeah.
Now, you walk into there, each of these four will see something completely different. One will be looking at the architecture, how it's done, and the beauty of it. The engineer will be looking at it, how it was done. He couldn't care less if it looks nice or not. The economic guy will think, okay, so many people here, it looks nice. How can we make money? What kind of shop would you want to make, you know, that would attract people? The administration will think, how these people are running around, how to get them in order, how to better get them, you know, make it more efficient for them to get their tickets and get on the trains. So that's the whole point, is since they don't have the mood of servant, they can't understand when it's described.
Right.
So they'll say it's not described, but it is described. Lord Chaitanya's whole mood is he's a servant. And all of his devotees are always serving. I mean, what is it? That, but also Vanamali, what's his name? You know, he's always bringing the prasad. And,
oh, yes. Vaninath Rai.
Vaninath Rai. And all those guys, constantly they're always going, bringing prasad, the king's sending prasad, all it is service. And then they're saying there's nothing to show service. The point is it's a mood. And so he's bringing prasad, you're helping him bring prasad, he's distributing, you're helping distribute. So the main ones is all you have to hear about, because it's not that it's you on your own there doing your thing and all that, and suddenly, you know, the whole world pulls in and it's just you and your pot and you're giving it out and all that and you're in such ecstasy. No, it's about you assisting these devotees who are assisting the devotees and Lord Chaitanya and all that, like Vaishnavas. It expands from you, not contracts into you. So they won't be able to understand. You understand what you have a service attitude, you can see the service. Right? Like if you want to test it, go to the temple or yatra, find that devotee who always likes to do service. You know, he's always done. Ask him, are there anything described service in the Shastras? Oh, he could go on for days. So the whole point, if they say it's not there, it's because they can't see it. Because the scriptures are Krishna. So if you're not surrendering to Krishna in that way, he won't reveal himself in that way. It's not that, it's just a book I can pick up and by my academic, you know, prowess, I can understand everything. No, it's Krishna. You can completely not understand it. I think it's in Chaitanya Bhagavat or someplace where Lord Chaitanya is telling Mayadevi, he says, now you can remove the covering on these verses, you know, about the Sankirtan movement and all that. Because otherwise, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had memorized all those verses. He didn't know, what are these for? Why are they here? Then when he met Lord Chaitanya, then all the verses came. Oh, this means this, that, because then she removed it. So that's the whole thing. It's that it's by Krishna's grace we understand. That there is no other way. You can say, no, by my intelligence, but that, how much do they understand? Can you take it? The most intelligent people are saying, you take all the matter in the universe, which is practically unlimited, and reduce that down into an infinitesimal spot that you can't even see. How is that possible? Can they give the mathematical formula for that? How much pressure it would take to get all of this into an infinitesimal spot? Can you even, I think the atoms would squish together at that point. You know? Because they say there's so much space in between. Where does that come? How can you get it like that? And if you say it started like that, where does the energy come from? Because there's no energy is always just transforming. That means if it's in that, it's been transformed. Who did that? They can't see it. Something as simple as that. You know, if everything's cyclic, this is also cyclic. They say, no, it began here. No, that means there's a cycle, and that might be one part of a cycle. So we're saying, yeah, that's there. That spot is called Mahavishnu's navel. You know? But they can't see it. So that's the whole point. And these guys got big IQs. You know, 160 or and above. I think there was one Russian guy had like 200 or something. Yeah, it's just like ridiculous. No one's, you know, even Sheldon doesn't get to there. You know? And he really thinks he's smart, you know? So that's the problem, is that they're blind. So one has to not follow blind people. It's by surrender. You want to be a servant? Surrender. Krishna will reveal everything. Like that. The point is, he reciprocates. You don't surrender, he sits there. He's been sitting there since time immemorial. He can sit more. He has no problem. He's patient. Yes.
Also, towards the end of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we saw that when Srimati Radha, when the servant sees Srimati Radharani with Krishna, their enjoyment, their feeling of ecstasy is 1,000 times more than
them. Yes. Them.
And that's why then Radharani puts them in front. And she feels 1,000 times more than what they are feeling.
Yes.
And that is the more...
And then Lord Chaitanya, he wants to be there and put them in the front. So that's the whole point. The servants... service means you want to put everybody else in the front. They're thinking, no, I want to be in the front. But that's the whole point. It's a principle. Everybody's there. It's just like whether you're cooking or you're assisting in cooking, the principles of cooking remain exactly the same. It's not that it changes. If I explain cooking, I've already explained assisting in cooking. Right? That's all. You know, you take the things, you wash the pots, you cut the vegetables, you do this. Oh, but it doesn't explain assisting. It means the cook's doing one thing. He tells you, you cut the vegetables, or you wash the pot. Or you stir this, I'm doing that. So it moves around. You might be dealing with it directly, you might be doing something in the background. Yes. So, therefore, the whole idea is that these different points that are being made, these are the main points. And if we see them as contradictory, that's because we're not understanding what Prabhav and Vibhav and all these things are. That's where the point's at. No, we're taking, no, it's either in this category and this. No, it can be both. It depends upon the mood. They're both in the Leela, but it also has these aspects. You know? And sometimes it'll fall nicely, and sometimes it overlaps. You know, like we said, Vyas, he'll be a Leela avatar, and he'll be an Avesha. Like that. He'll be Vishnu Tattva, he'll be Jiva Tattva. You know, and any of those ones that are Jivas, Krishna may take that if no one else is doing. Like that. So,
Maharaj?
Yes.
These ones are the ones which in Lago Bhagavatamrit, Rupa Goswami explained those four categories, other Avesha, Prabhava, Vibhava and Paravasta. So here the Prabhava and Vibhava are explained.
Yes.
But there he explains the other two as well. So they're all the 25 come in there.
In those four categories.
Yeah. Yeah. And then because the next verse described the six categories which we generally know.
Mm-hmm.
The Purushavatars, Gunavatars, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason I introduced all that also, because here also it's mentioned the same thing. But there he completes the whole cycle.
Because Krishna can be, means the Krishna avatar in every Dwapara Yuga, because he's a Yuga avatar. They'll come every cycle. And the other, the Leela avatar, they'll come in a day of Brahma. You know, if they come more, then fine. But, you know, it's scheduled is, you know, like that. So all of them except one in a day of Brahma will be, an expansion of the Lord, a Swamsa. But then, you know, but as the Leela avatar. But then once in a day of Brahma, he'll come personally himself. Like that. So that's why the different ones can be in many categories. You know, because otherwise you put him in all the categories, but he's here, like, but that needs explanation. So that's why the acharyas start with these main points. Then you make some charts, it can be, but the chart itself will never explain it. Vedas aren't do-it-yourself books. They never are. They're the manual that with that you study from the teacher, and then having based on what the teacher has given, then you can continue with that. So as Prabhupada's given us the book, now we can study. But at the same time as in the association of the Vaishnavas, seeing what Prabhupada said, what the Acharyas have said, like that, then we can move forward. But it is spiritual life for idiots, but it's not, you know, that the book itself is going to be enough. You have to have the book with the instructions. Does that make sense? Just like Mahabharata. How many people have read Mahabharata? How much do they understand the position of everyone? Not so much. But when you read the Bhagavatam with Prabhupada's purports, then you understand Mahabharata. Now when you read the Mahabharata, you can understand their position. So that's the whole thing. Without the Acharyas, you actually can't understand. So therefore, if you don't understand it, then, you know, continue chanting, continue serving, and at one point it'll make sense. And if not, remember Krishna at the time of death, go back to Godhead, and then, you know, whether it needs to make sense or not, it doesn't matter. You know, you're absorbed in Krishna. Because the holy name alone can reveal everything. So these are just ways to keep us absorbed in Krishna. And it's given by the Acharyas. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started the concept, and Srila Prabhupada then formalized it into what we have. Is that we're okay? No? Okay. 220, 245 to 246. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, there are six kinds of incarnations, avatars, of Krishna. One comprises the incarnations of Vishnu, Purusha avatars, and another comprises the incarnations meant for the performance of pastimes, Leela avatars. Right? Before those Leela avatars, or they come in that way of doing it, but it also comes in here. Right? There are incarnations that control the material qualities, Guna avatars, incarnations associated with the reign of each Manu, Manvantara avatars, incarnations in different millenniums, Yuga avatars, and incarnations of empowered living beings, Shaktivesha avatars. Srila Prabhupada. The Guna avatars are three, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.3. The avatars associated with the reign of each Manu, known as Manvantara avatars, are listed as follows in Srimad Bhagavatam. 8th Canto, Chapters 1, 5, and 13. 1. Yajna, 2. Vibhu, 3. Satyasena, 4. Hari, 5. Vaikunta, 6. Ajita, 7. Vamana, 8. Sarvabhauma, 9. Rishabha, 10. Vishvakshena, 11. Dharmakshetu, 12. Sudhama, 13. Yogeshwara, and 14. Brihadbhanu. Altogether, these are 14 in number, right? Because 14 manus in a day of Brahma, so then the 14 incarnations will come. Because the Manvantara avatar, he protects Indra and his service. You know, so when the demons get too much trouble and all that, they take care of all that. Altogether, these are 14 in number, and of these, Yajna and Vamana are also counted among the Leela avatars, right? Because they also did that. So we see, you're going to have this overlap. All these Manvantara incarnations are sometimes called Vaibhava incarnations. Right? Because there was Prabhav and... Now did he give it up here? Which ones were... Which he was saying somewhere Prabhav? They are also counted as Prabhav. Yeah, so then these are... All these are sometimes called Vaibhava. Because they'll have a different kind of mood, form, and all these things like that. Like Vamana. You know, quite different form than other, you know, forms of Vishnu. The 14 Yuga avatars, no, the 4 Yuga avatars are 1. Shukla, white, in Satya Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.21. 2. Rakta, red, in Treta Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.24. 3. Shyama, dark blue, in Dwapara, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.27. And 4. Generally Krishna, black, but in special cases, Pita, yellow, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in Kali Yuga. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 and 10.8.13. The Shaktivesha avatars are categorized into 1. Forms of divine absorption, Bhagavat Avesha, such as Kapila Dev or Rishabh Dev, and 2. Divinely empowered forms, Shaktivesha, of whom 7 are foremost. 1. Seshanag in the Vaikuntha world, empowered for the personal service of the Supreme Lord, Swa Sevana Shakti. 2. Anantadev, empowered to bear all the planets within the universe, Bhudharana Shakti. 3. Lord Brahma, empowered with the energy to create the cosmic manifestation, Srishti Shakti. 4. Chatusana, or the Kumaras, specifically empowered to distribute transcendental knowledge, Jnana Shakti. 5. Narad Muni, empowered to distribute devotional service, Bhakti Shakti. 6. Maharaj Prithu, specifically empowered to rule and maintain the living entities, Palana Shakti. And 7. Parasuram, specifically empowered to cut down rogues and demons, Dushta Damana Shakti. Right, so you see here is that you have those, but then some are also in other places, like Brahma. He's the Srishti Shakti, but he's also Guna Avatar. Like that. You know, Chatushana, they're also Leela Avatars. You know, so like this. Is that you know where they fit in these categories, and so then somebody has so many different aspects. 220, 247 to 248. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Childhood and boyhood are the typical ages of the deity, the son of Maharaj Nanda. Are the typical ages of the deity. Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, performed his pastimes as a child and as a boy. There are innumerable incarnations of Krishna, and there is no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon and the branches of a tree. Srila Prabhupada. Although the moon appears to be located in the branches of a tree, it is actually situated very far away. Right? So somebody wants to know where the moon is, you point out the tree. Yes. And see up there on the left there, up top, that white, yeah. So like that. Similarly, none of the avatars or incarnations of Lord Krishna are within this material world, but they are visible by the causeless mercy of the Lord. We should not consider them to belong to this material world. So that's the whole thing. They're in the spiritual world. But then we're considering that, no, they're here. You know, so therefore that disastrous argument comes up about, Mahavishnu, and then Jiva is coming from him. But then they're taking it as material. He's in the spiritual world. Like that. The Jivas are, eternally liberated. Whether they act in that way or not, that's what they decide. They want to act in that way, they move forward. They don't want to act in that way, then they move into the material creation. So that's the thing, is we're seeing things by time and space, by social status, by power, by enjoyment. And so we have to gradually, by the devotional process, give up these kind of views. And it's just, we want to please Krishna. We want to serve Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Then we see is all these things become very easily understood. As stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 9.11, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Avatars descend of their own free will, and although they may act like ordinary human beings, they do not belong to this material world. Lord Krishna's avatars can be understood only by the grace of the Lord. Right? So that's it, by his grace, not by intelligence. Right? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, intelligence won't be dissatisfied. Right? But you have to be able to understand it based on the principles given. Then you can see the logic. Because that's the point, is one doesn't see the logic. Mm-hmm. You know? It's just like, let us say, your common, point of misunderstanding, the feminine mentality, masculine mentality. So the men are saying the women aren't logical. The women are saying the men are not logical. Why? Because the men are looking at how mechanically the material energy is transforming and getting a particular physical result. And if you're not doing that particular technical method, it won't get that result. So that's not logical. Right? Why? Because they're creating situation. But you just have situation, and then what? You know, just like you have in the 1800s, you have all these guys out in California with tons of gold, sitting in their funky jeans they haven't washed for a year, and drinking some whiskey. So what? They have that much money. So what? They can't do anything with it. You know, how much whiskey can you drink? So then that's the whole point, right? Is that yes, you have a field, but if nothing happens in the field, what's the point of the field? Mm-hmm. Right? Feminine nature, then it works on the logic of how emotions move from one to the next, like Rupa Goswami's talking about rasa. You have the one, the sthaya, the vibhava, the anubhava, all these things, and how the centuries come in, and when they come in, then they come in and clash with it, and then that creates a thing, and then that moves out. And when it becomes reconciled, then that changes into something else, and that's called vyavichari and all these different things. That's a logic in itself, because the guys are just going through taking one thing and looking at it from 10 different angles and then laughing about it. Then the women think, this is stupid. This is so childish. They really do. They think the men are so childish when they do this. And then when the women are talking what they're doing and it's moving from one emotional thing to the next and just it doesn't seem to finish any one conversation, the men are going, this is really crazy. But the whole point is both of them are logical. But you have to know the principles on which they're functioning. So one is creating a field, one is creating how to enjoy the field. That combination together, bingo, you have something that works. So you have to understand how it all works together. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. This demand that has got to meet my how it does when it's based on rasa, and it won't make sense logically, because otherwise, if it did, wouldn't the more intelligent they are, wouldn't they be better at all their social interactions and everything? Right? But they're famous for absolutely not understanding at all what's going on. I don't know if any of you had experience in working with like physicists and other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they really have a problem sometimes. Some of them don't, but that's rare. So therefore we can understand it's two different compatible fields. So that's why then you see they're taken up. Krishna takes up one asset, Balaram takes up the other. Like that. And so then it works very nicely. So this demand for logic then means the point is you have to actually understand what logic is. What is the field? We want it to be mechanical logic. But it also can be like music, how it moves, the notes move. Like for a musician, how he moves through the notes. There's a logic there. Someone who knows music, they're very impressed. Oh, he went this way. He could have gone these three ways, but he went this and it brought out something unique because everyone else does the other thing. That was the amazing thing before, is that you had the music very formal. The people, rasiks, would go sit there and very much appreciate and all that. And then, it just moved in this very mechanical way. And it worked nice. Then Ravi Shankar came. He had studied under a very, very good teacher. He had gone to the West. They just won't buy that. So then he starts moving. He's keeping all the things, but he might move it instead of everything you can do in this at this one thing now. There's 10 ways I can work with this section. And then after that, I'll move to the next section. There's 10 ways. And the next section, 10. He'll take two or three out of this, then move to two or three out of this, then that, then go back and move it and mix it up. And it's completely bona fide. But they never thought of that because they just thought mechanically, yeah, I did all that and there's no more I can do with that, then I move on and everyone's happy. But he then did this and mixed it up and then bang, now everybody's listening. So that's the thing that must be appreciated, is that that aspect of taste, that's what the jiva is looking for. You know, and you need a stable situation. Krishna creates that stable situation. So you connect to Krishna, things become stable. Then we can taste properly. That's how it works. Yes.
Another problem we've noticed with logicians, or those who claim to be logicians, although according to the Veda, they are not, is that for them logic is concrete, and the experience is abstract.
Exactly. That's
but
a very good
point. But for most everybody, experience is concrete.
Yes.
And logic, okay, it doesn't logic, but that doesn't matter. Because experience is what people are looking for.
Yes, yes. But those logicians, because of their experience from the logic, that taste is why they do it. And others don't get the taste, so they don't do it. So they think that they're being objective when they're not. They're totally subjective. Because they'll only analyze in a way that they get a taste. Because otherwise you bring in something that they're not going to agree with, like let's say like God. They're going to say, no, God can't create anything. But the point is they can't prove that there's no God. So if you can't prove it's not there, and there's indication that it is, then in actual science, it's supposed to be accepted as one of the features of it. That's how calculus works. You have these theorems, and the rule is they haven't disproved them, so we use them. So you haven't disproved God, so they could use it. It would answer so many questions for them. But they absolutely refuse, because they're so subjective. And they claim, no, we're objective. No, they're not. At least it's a 50% chance, you know, which is pretty good, because the chance of the Big Bang happening, I think, is like one in like some trillions or quadrillions like that. So, you know, this is 50%. That's much better, you know. But, you know, somehow, in other words, don't go with them to the casino. You'll lose. You know, they're going to bet on something that can never happen. It could happen, you know, once every 10 million years. Maybe it'll happen now, you know. Yeah, so the point is they're going to lose. So that's exactly what you say. Is the Vedic points out is that how you perceive it, that's the concrete, because that's why you act in the way you do. That's your values. Everything around you, that's abstract, because anybody could, you know, like we said before, those four different people go into the train station. The train station is abstract. Now, each one pulls from that an economic, an administrative, you know, an architectural engineering. That's what's concrete for them. But for the next person, it's not. You know, it's just another abstract thing. So that's the point, is the psychology has to be appreciated. They'll think, no, it's just pure logic. There's no such thing. You're a jiva. You're a living entity. No such thing. Pure means it's connected to Krishna. That's pure. But they will not appreciate. Right? But someone like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati did. And they're logicians way beyond anything we have to offer. And they saw it. They accepted. And you see the benefit they got. And then we don't. We sit there. We know the next thing is they drown. The hand goes below the water and you never see him again. That's how the story goes. Yeah?
You
stone in
the scissors?
Huh? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Paper.
Oh no, that's enough. That's enough. So there was something with the. I can't remember the story. I only remember that part because that's the only thing that stood out. But there were two logicians and they're fighting, and one doesn't agree, you know. And so one saying, you know, it's two or it's bifurcated or something, and the other one said, it's this. And so one got so angry, he threw him into the water. And even as he's going down, he goes in, but his hand comes out and like this, and then before he disappears. You know, so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What to do? Avatars ascend of their own free... Okay, we did that. Lord Krishna and his avatars can be understood only by the grace of the Lord. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo na medyaya na bahuna shutena yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vrinute tanum swam. The Supreme Lord is not obtained by means of expert explanations, vast knowledge, or even much hearing. He is obtained only by one who he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form. Katha Upanishad 1.2.23. Atapi te deva padam bhuja dvaya prasada leshanu grihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahim no nachanya ekopi chiram vichin van. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue studying the Vedas for many years. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.29. Yes.
This grace or this mercy that Krishna gives to the devotee to understand,
yes,
is that Sambhit Shakti?
We would look at it as bhakti because it'll be the combination of Samvit and Ladini. But it's also Sandini because she reveals. That's what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says. When with devotion you take your activities, your knowledge, use it to please Krishna, then the Sandini, that she reveals everything. Like we mentioned here, you understand the Dham, then you can understand the pastimes. As it's mentioned, by gaining the grace of, by pleasing Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda Prabhu becomes pleased, and then the glories of the Dham are revealed. Then by getting the mercy of the six Goswamis, by following the footsteps of the Acharyas, then the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are revealed. In other words, the Dham is first, then the pastimes. Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumada Srimad Ratnagara Simhasana Sto. So we've established Vrindavan, the tree, the asan, then Sri Sri Radha Srila Govinda Devo. Rishtali B. Sevimana, like that. So that's how it works. So the thing is it's revealed. When you have that inclination to please Krishna and serve Krishna, then he chooses and he reveals. Krishna is more eager to reveal himself than we are to understand him. So if there's any opportunity that we'll take it, you know, but this thing, oh, why doesn't he, you know, like that, you know, why didn't he... Why do I have to work? So I have to pick up the ladu. Oh my God! Now I have to put it in my mouth. Oh, I got to bite. Oh no, I got to chew. And then I have to swallow. Why can't Krishna do all this for me? You know. I mean, you're into IV or what?
Yeah, this is not rasik.
That's not rasik. But laying in a bed with a drip in your hand, that's rasik somehow or another. Because that, you're doing nothing, you know, they're taking care, you know. You want to say something?
Yeah, that's anugraha shakti.
Anugraha shakti.
It's anugraha shakti.
Yeah, anugraha shakti of Lord. And then I think in the Preeti Sandarbha when it describes about the stage of prema, and then describe that the love, when it is mixed with mercy, then it becomes audarya.
Mm.
So it's, I would say, like it would be part of Ladini Shakti.
Yes, well, it's that combination, that Ladini, and that's what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Because it'll come in there, and there may be within that specific Shaktis at work.
Yeah.
Like that. But the point is when you have Samvit, Sandini, Ladini, then, you know, that's your, you know, Jnana Shakti there. But then when the Samvit and the Ladini are mixed together, you get Bhakti Shakti. With that, Sandini, which is taking care of that Jnana aspect of Ichakriya Jnana, then she reveals, you know, what's happening. So the whole point is unless you approach the Lord through Bhakti, you can't understand. You know, you catch a little bit something. You know, people do and say no, but they study and they learn so much. And then, yeah, after 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, then does anybody care for their knowledge? How many, you know, I mean, what has stood the test of time even in the modern world? Pythagoras, okay, he gets a mention for a triangle thing. You know, how many other people get a mention?
Einstein. Newton.
Okay, yeah. Newton with the apple on his head. You know? Hmm? Yeah. He studied on one island, studied where there's birds and tortoises. Then he works this out for everything. It's like, you know. Yeah. You know, so it's a few guys. But then, even then, some people start to say, well, you know, there's doubts about it. I've seen one work on somebody who's from the same field as Darwin. Says that most people in that field, they don't agree with Darwin. Because they point out, how did you get an eye? How did you get? How does that how does that over generations it develops? You know, they say as the fish is there, he's being harassed, so he grows feet and then walks out onto the land and all that. Now he's a crocodile, you know, you know, and then you know, then the animals out there are really disturbed that this crocodile comes, so then they grow big, huge feet like an elephant, and then stomp on their heads, and they, you know, like this, then the world order is put back, and you know, so it doesn't make sense. It's not science. So even people in the old field, so like that. That's why I mentioned Pythagoras. People haven't argued with that yet. Like that. But.
The Darwin theory is being removed from curriculums in many countries.
Oh, okay.
Especially because it's being pressured by the Christians to remove
the church.
Yeah, by the church, but also it doesn't have as much traction even in its own field. They're just seeing it, how, you know, the possibility of that evolution by that method is, again, you know, one in trillions. It's just, it's like, you know, it's like there aren't that many of that species that you could even get that, you know. So, you know, oh, no, but over millions. They just say that. It sounds great. You know, it's actually like saying, yes, over millions of years, you'll become a millionaire. You know, so, no, you're going to be dead. But, you know, hey. And this whole thing is that I decided, you know, then why isn't then everybody decided they're going to be rich? Why aren't they rich? You know, everybody decided they're going to have a, you know, a six pack or an eight pack. How many people have it? You know? So where is this, what are they talking about here?
Also, if you look further, the survival of the fittest would lead to one single species.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Because he is the only one who survived. So we see all the varieties. So how can we explain this?
So then that would mean that, like, Al Capone is like on the top of the evolutionary cycle.
But there should be no monkeys then.
Yeah, there should. That's the whole point, I think, with Prabhu is made. Then there wouldn't be anything there from before. I always thought it was interesting, that BTG article, you know, with the fish. It shows this fish, you know, this really, you know, deep sea fish, these really far out looking kind of not overly, you wouldn't put him in your fish bowl, your fish tank in your house. And this guy is sitting there and it says 300, you know, million BC. Then the next picture shows exactly the same fish, 100 million BC. Then the next, you know, fish, you know, whatever, 10,000, you know, BC. Then the next fish, that means today. It looks exactly the same, and all, you know, it's still the same as, like you said. Why would it? Because the point is if they couldn't survive as that, and they transformed, then the other one would die out.
They said that the monkeys, they saw that the humans are the dead end, so they stopped the evolution.
They stopped, the monkeys stopped. They says, I don't want to work, you know, I want to sit in a traffic jam, you know. Yeah. Yes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. O learned Brahmins, just as hundreds and thousands of small rivulets issue from great reservoirs of water, innumerable incarnations flow from Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the reservoir of all power. Footnote 60. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.26. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as the Purusha avatars, or Vishnu incarnations. These are of three types. Srila Prabhupada. Up to this verse, the many types of expansions have been described. Now the manifestation of the Lord, different potencies will be described. Right? So now you're getting the forms in that. Now he's talking about potencies. Right? So we're taking a different approach to what was there. 220, 251, 270. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator and the total material energy, Mahat. The second is Garbhodakshay, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Kirodakshay, who lives in the heart of every living being. Right, so Karanodakshay being the creator and total material energy. So the Mahatattva, that is him. Means that's all his energy. So the primary creation, everything about that, the glands, all these things, that's all him. So then when you have the individual universe and that, and it's how it's going, that's then Garbhodakshay. It means how the universal form is going to function in there. Otherwise, original one, that's all Mahavishnu. Then that's then in each universe. He expands in each universe, brings with him that, and then he does. But the universe is already there. It says he enters the universe and then fills it with half water. It doesn't say he made the layers. That was already done by Karanodakshay. Then he comes up, fills it up half with water. Then he makes the 14 planetary systems. Then he expands as Kiradakshay. Then he enters the heart of every living entity. You know, in every atom, like this. Does that make sense? Yeah. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. 61. This verse appears in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Purva Khanda 2.9, where it's been quoted from Satvata Tantra. It says,
yes. So, regarding Mahavishnu,
right?
Because he's Karanavati Shai, so he's lying on the Karana ocean also.
Yes.
And if this is outside of all the universe, so where's this ocean?
Yes, the ocean is outside. Just like when you get to the the universe, they're floating. You have to cross the Viraja. So he's in the Viraja. He's.
And
Vairaja and Vaitarani is within the universe that I know of. It's down in the bottom. That's where you have to cross that to get to Yamaraja's abode. Mm-hmm. And if you're pious, it's a nice, you know, beautiful river with lotuses and nice fish. And if you're impious, then it's this nasty thing full of all kinds of nasty
animals.
Vairaja
is different.
Yes.
It's on top.
The Viraja is outside the universe. That's why when you poke this hole through the universe, then some of that came in. That's also, it's known as Ganga, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, yeah, so it's a transcendental. So that's the point, is the Lord's transcendental, he's there, he's situated in the spiritual world. All these things are there. So it's all his energies, which are all spiritual energies. The external energy is also one of his spiritual energies. But it has it's given the potency that the living entities that want to deal with Krishna's energies without participating with Krishna, they want to exploit his energies. Then the external energy, because it is unconscious, even though it's spiritual, it's unconscious. But then the living entities can deal with that, because something that's unconscious will give you less trouble than something that's conscious. Like that. You know, it's just like you drive your car and you grind the gears and you don't change the oil and you don't do this and that. It's not going to complain. It may fall apart, but it won't complain. You can imagine if that car was conscious, it would be harassing you all day. You know? So therefore, then the living entity, to feel that he's a Lord, he's given this to deal with. So with the Lord, he's just dealing with his spiritual energies, and the jiva is that. But there's a potency for the Ajnana Shakti that he can be covered, and therefore he identifies with the material nature instead of identifying as the soul is spiritual. So that's why it's called, that's its illusion. It exists, it's real. So the others take it, if it's illusion, it can't exist. No, you're in illusion. It exists. So when they say the rope and the snake, but then they say rope and snake and use it in a different context. Because the point is you're saying one's real, one's not. They say rope and snake and they both don't exist. So that means your words don't exist, you don't exist. Why am I listening to you? You know? So, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing from Krishna's perspective. It's all spiritual. It's all his energy. So then there's no problem in him dealing and all this. And then, so therefore, we have to cross beyond all this. Does that make sense? Because wherever he's situated, it's in transcendence. But we'll put the time and space thing on it and then try to say it's material and this one's here and that's there and this is in the material world and that's not, when we're talking about the Lord and his Dham and his pastimes. And so then we make these distinctions and then we get grumpy because we can't understand it. We relegate the Dham to the material world. We relegate his pastimes to the material world. Oh, this is superior. Oh, that's that. So these things are given just so you see the relative aspects in rasa. But as far as the transcendental nature of the Lord, they're all transcendental. There's no difference. That's why even in the rasas, you say no one's superior to the other. But the intensity is greater. That's how the distinction is made. But as far as being pleasing to Krishna, they're all pleasing Krishna. So it's a matter of intensity. So, you say? No. Krishna has unlimited potencies, out of which three are chief. Willpower, Ichha Shakti, the power of knowledge, Jnana Shakti, and the creative energy, Kriya Shakti. The predominator of the willing potency, Ichha Shakti, is Lord Krishna. For by his supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge, Jnana Shakti, is expressed through Vasudeva. There is no possibility of creation without thinking, feeling, willing, knowledge, and activity. Well, that's interesting. So thinking, feeling, and willing go into Ichha. Then you have knowledge as the jnana, and kriya as the activity. That's interesting. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge, and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Lord Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, Kriya Shakti, he creates both the material and the spiritual world. That original Sankarshan, Lord Balarama, is the cause of both the material and spiritual creation. He is the predominating deity of egotism. And by the will of Krishna and the power of spiritual energy, he creates the spiritual world, which consists of the planet Goloka Vrindavan and the Vaikuntha planets. Although there is no question of creation as far as the spiritual world is concerned, the spiritual world is nonetheless manifested by the supreme will of Sankarsana. Right? And why is it? It means, you say, it's because he has will, and therefore he creates. But his will is following Krishna's will. Because Ichha Shakti, Krishna is the Lord of it. That means all Vishnu Tattva who have the willing, because they're all Krishna, they follow the will of Krishna. Right? And then Balaram, he then is what manifests everything that there is. And so all the different forms of the Lord that are following that, they're all following Balaram. And then when you talk about the jnana, the knowledge that's required, and that means then they're all following Vasudeva. Right? But that knowledge is then used to create, which is following Krishna's will. So all the Vishnumurtis have all these three aspects. But in other words, they all are following Krishna's will. So the jnana is following the purpose of applying, and that's to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's all Krishna who's taking all these different positions. So then Krishna, simply by his will, everything's happening. That's why you can say, by Ichha, everything's created. Because by his will, that's why it happens. Then the Kriya will do that, you know. But then you can say, but to create you need knowledge, you know. But the point is that knowledge is being applied there. Does that make sense? So you can take each one going down, but each one is serving. So the Ichha is the main, Kriya is serving Ichha, Jnana is serving Kriya. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I have a question. Someone asked, why does Krishna have the desire to constantly generate spirit soul?
Because that's just who he is. He is Shaktiman, so he generates Shakti. That's what he does. You know, I mean, what's the point of it? What will they? What is gained from this point?
Well, their idea behind it is the chance that we have to turn towards Krishna, to turn towards Narayan, you know, it's like there's so many souls being generated, and out of all these souls, we may be the ones who end up in the natural world and suffer.
Yeah, but they're all marginal, and they all have the choice.
Yeah.
It's our free will that we come here. So to blame it on anybody else, that's cheating. That's all. So what does it matter if there's unlimited living entities? The cosmos is unlimited. There's plenty of space. Krishna, you know, we're not talking about Amsterdam here or something, you know, where everybody has to live in a, you know, a little, you know, 3 meter square apartment or something.
They're Chinese, huh?
You know, the Chinese, yeah, 10,000 people in one block, you know.
Oh, it's
yeah, that's probably why the question was asked.
Yeah.
A specific question would be why Krishna created Chinese? That's the real question.
Yeah.
Not everybody else.
Yeah, that's a fact. But the thing is, you take a big city, you know, like Beijing. Now, if you just drive for an hour, are you not in the country?
Yeah.
Is there big high rises there and other?
No.
And you could keep probably driving for days.
Well, you can drive in China, no kidding, for 150 kilometers, and you see just one apartment building after another.
Yeah, but that's if you're on that line. But if you go the opposite direction, because I remember once as a kid driving from, I think, Los Angeles down, I'm not sure, maybe San Diego or something. That's kind of like after San Diego, you kind of fall off the edge of the earth or something like that. So the big long drive for me, I thought it was 3 hours. Then I got corrected the other day. It's only about an hour and a half or something. And so all it was from both sides of the road, solid cement the whole way. Anywhere you looked, it was solid cement. But if at any place you just went off clover leaf, you know, the Americans show always, you go off like this, and you go off the thing like that. You know, everyone else just has a roundabout, and you just make it simple. Yeah. Yeah. So you go off that, and you go like this for about 5-10 minutes, you're in the mountains. Or if you go off this way, you're in the ocean. You know? So that's the funny thing, is that in that line, it's all just solid and everyone thinks that's what it is. But no, you just go a little bit this way and like you said, you're in the vineyards, literally. And you go a little bit more, then you're in the desert. You know, you're over in, you know, whatever it is, Nevada or something.
It's interesting because, you know, when you walk around Mayapur, you see all these buildings coming up.
Yeah.
But you have an aerial view. We're in the jungle here.
Yeah.
It's just tiny little looking.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's
we're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, no, it's like that. You know, or the funny, like I mentioned when we went on the Burj Khalifa, you go up to the 124th floor, I think, is the viewing gallery.
Yeah.
Like that, because it's so small up there, it's just the whole floor is the viewing gallery. And when you look out, you only see sand. But when you're on the ground, you think it's so built up. It's just sand.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the whole thing, is they're thinking, oh no, it's all this and it's all that. But you know, even Hong Kong, so much of it is just, you know, just trees and stuff the other side.
Yeah.
You know, you go on the, it means you have the Kowloon side and then that, and you have the main, that's all that, but on the other side
it's just bare mountains.
Yeah.
It's wilderness. Literally behind the buildings.
Yeah. It's so it's just, that's the whole thing, is that we create our own ideas. So the point is Krishna has plenty of space. There's space for everybody. It's just if you want to live like ants, then he's created ants. You know, it's like the one termite hill, there can be, I think, something like 1 million ants in it. They're more than regular ants and stuff. But 1 million ants, like that, means one colony can go from here up to, you know, that big road along the Jalangi?
Yeah.
Like that. They can take care of this much space. It's huge what they can take care of. So if you want to live like that, hey, you know, it's Krishna will accommodate. So they have to understand this. What's the point? That's what he does. You worry about what you do. Don't worry about why is he doing that. Why aren't you doing what you're supposed to do?
Actually, it's exactly the same with Israel. Such a small country, and there's so many people, we can drive like in 2 minutes.
Yeah, you're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Continue with this nowhere. You get nowhere.
I wasn't meaning nowhere, I meant the other side, the Jordan, but I got
exactly.
Yeah, no, everywhere. That was Prabhupada's point. Everywhere you go, there's space. And then they're saying overpopulation, overcrowding, you know, how are we going to have food? There's tons of stuff.
It's like drive from Dallas to Houston. Dallas to Houston, 3-hour drive.
Yeah?
And it's all the same. Nothing is there.
Nothing, yeah.
And it's straight road. And nobody's there.
Yeah, and eight lanes, right?
No.
Wasn't 8 lanes?
I was there 25 years ago. Maybe
now. Oh no! But when I was a kid, maybe the ones going the other way, coast to coast, are 8 lanes.
Eight lanes.
All the roads there are 8 lanes. That's why I was, you know, in Europe, I think, what, 4 lanes? What's going on here? You know, you hear about the Autobahn, you know, ooh, you get there, it's 4 lanes. It's kind of, huh?
It's 4 lanes and unlimited speed limit.
Yeah.
It's like here. From here.
So they're not so stupid. If it was 8 lanes and unlimited, then, you know, yeah, that would be a problem.
50 miles an hour, you know,
here also, no? From here to Calcutta, it's also 2 lanes, unlimited speed.
Like the Autobahn. I never thought of that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Go as fast as you want. That's fine. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.